Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And I remember back in the day, it's been a couple of decades, as I recall, since The Population Bomb was first published by Paul Ehrlich, a book that certainly caught my attention and in some ways changed my life. I think true of many of us. And Paul and his wife, Anne, have a new book out, The Dominant Animal, Human Evolution and the Environment, that brings together just a whole collection of things. Paul Ehrlich on the line with us. Paul, welcome, or Dr. Ehrlich, welcome to the program.
Paul is just fine. Great to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. Human Evolution and the Environment, it's interesting in this book how you broadly submit the hypothesis that where we're at in a certain way is a function more of our genes than anything else.
Well, we have a long evolutionary history which gave us the capability to develop culture, and culture is, of course, what's made us the dominant animal on the planet. And the sad thing is that our very triumph, our power, is now basically cutting off the branch we're sitting on. We are faced for the first time in human history with a collapse of a global civilization. We've lost lots of civilizations in the past, but they were local or regional. Now we're facing the Big Bang, and we're having a presidential election where most of the critical issues aren't even being discussed.
Right. You point out in the book that really the sustainable carrying capacity of the planet for human biomass, for human beings, is probably under 2 billion.
If you want to have a decent life, I mean, we might squeeze 8 or 10 or even 12 billion on if you want to have a battery chicken kind of planet in which every human being has the absolute minimum food, space, education, and so on. But I don't think many of us want to go in that direction.
Right. And you know, people say, what, 2 billion? We're at 6 point something right now on our way to 7. But there were 2 billion people. I mean, that was the total population of the planet the year that Franklin Roosevelt was sworn in as president of the United States. And it wasn't
right.
Like the world was lightly populated at that time.
That was when I was born, and we had enough people to have gigantic cities with opera and good restaurants. And we also had enough rooms so that you could live like a hermit if you wanted to. And we weren't, for example, altering the climate in ways that may very well make us all very hungry in the not-too-distant future.
Right. That all began, really, when we crossed about the 4 billion threshold in 74.
Right. Somewhere around there.
Yeah. We're talking with Paul Ehrlich. He and Ann Ehrlich have written a new book, The Dominant Animal, Human Evolution and the Environment. Paul, it seems to me, and I'd love to get your take on this. I have such respect for your perspective on these issues, it seems to me that some of the things that are built into our culture, arguably, setting aside morality, arguably at some point in the past would have been useful for culture. For example, we know that in cultures where women are the property of men, basically, that population explodes. And then in cultures where women are relatively empowered relative to men, have relatively equal power, population will stabilize.
Yeah, which is... one of the reasons that we ought to give women more power, because we need to get the population actually declining.
Yeah, exactly. My point is that, you know, 7,000 years ago, when our culture, you know, the first vestiges of our culture were emerging, those memes that became things like, you know, in the New Testament, Paul saying a woman should shut up and sit in the back of the church, and you know, the separation of genders in most of the major religions of the world and things like that, that perpetuated the disempowerment of women and the view of women as the property of men. Those, arguably from a purely evolutionary point of view or whatever, you know, the tribe that had the largest army was the tribe that won, and there is a lot of cultures that just went extinct because their people got wiped out. And, I mean, there's even stories about it in the Book of Joshua. And those are stories, those are cultural memes that we now need to leave behind in a really rapid and really radical way. You're talking in this book about transforming a culture after 7,000 years of setup when we've still got, and you talk about, you know, how the Pat Buchanans of the world, you know, I don't think that you name him, but the folks who are out there being hysterical about, oh, you know, we've got negative population growth, this is a terrible thing. My recollection is that even after the Black Plague, what emerged was a middle class and a renaissance, that reducing population is actually a positive thing, and using a positive means to do it, that is a change of culture, rather than a negative means to do it, like SARS or the bird flu, is probably the best way to go.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, all this nonsense about the problem with population shrinkage in Europe... Europe and the United States and the other rich countries should be shrinking. We're the gigantic consumers. We're the ones who are wrecking our life support systems much more than the poor people of the planet. And just on a plain ethical basis, we want to give the poor people of a planet a decent life. And so the whole idea that it's bad to have population shrinkage is just nonsensical. After all, if we ever need them, people can be produced by unskilled labor that really love their work. So I'm not at all worried about that. It would take, you know, maybe 100 years to get down towards 2 billion. And if we found out that was going to be too few, we could change our course any time. But as you indicate, what we need is a gigantic change of norms. We are basically a small group animal for the first time is trying to live in gigantic groups. And if you look around and look at the newspapers, you can see we're not doing too well at it.
Right, but we're biologically wired, apparently. Now, well, actually, this raises a really interesting question. Is our culture the aberrant culture? Because when you look at most indigenous cultures that have had 10,000 years of trial and error to work this out, many of them came and went. And, you know, there's a lot of evidence of cultures that grew, built big cities, and then collapsed and then vanished for whatever reason, a whole variety of possible reasons. But many of them ended up living in balance with their environment. You know, the idea that sustainability is where somebody, all waste is something else's food, you know, and so they would, you know, live hunting-gathering people, you know, would live in one particular area for 5 or 6 years and then move, you know, 20 miles away and move in that area so that first area recovered. And there would just be this kind of circular pattern, and it was entirely sustainable. We're living in a way that's entirely unsustainable. It's a linear culture,
right,
as it were.
What we're doing is using up our natural capital. We're doing
right. So how do we incorporate the lessons of those older cultures into our modern younger culture?
Well, the issue is, do we educate people right? In other words, one of the reasons that Ann and I wrote the book is that I got so tired of being at the best university in the world and realizing that the vast majority of our graduates could not discuss the critical issues of the day. They did not know anything about human evolution. They could not really describe why the climate is changing and what the likely consequences are and so on. And so I started offering a course in human evolution and the environment. And the book grew out of the course because we can't continue to not educate our population, to have politicians. I mean, here we are, talk about cultural problems. We have probably the worst president in the history of the United States. How did we manage to get him at a time that's so crucial for society, when the climate is being changed, threatening our food supply, our cities, the possibilities of warfare, and so on? And we have had a government that has fought against doing anything at all about climate change. That's right. Bad. We need to change our entire culture, and that's a gigantic job, but it could be done.
So where do we start?
Education. Yeah, I think the first place we start, of course, is by changing the government in the United States. The U.S. is still looked to by much of the world, and if we changed our behavior, if we said we've spent 100 years, or almost 100 years, designing our country around the automobile, now we want to change it and design it around people. This is what we want in the United States. If we had a population policy in the United States, if we said, yeah, we consume too much. But the whole idea, the way to fix the economy when it's shaking, is not by telling everybody to go out and buy another SUV and another refrigerator. We have,
which is what George
economists
Bush said.
Are beginning to look at these problems.
Yeah, yeah, and it seems to me that at a certain level, the core of culture is very often embodied in religion. The stories that we tell ourselves. Do you call for a change in our religious perspectives?
Well, let's put it this way. I wouldn't call for a change in our basic religious perspective, which is fundamentally good people treat other people the way they wanted to be treated. But, of course, you may have noticed that we don't follow the perspectives of the great religion. And all too often they're used as simply ways of applying power over people, trying to tell them what to do, telling them, for instance, when we have unnaturally greatly reduced our death rate, which I think is a wonderful thing. We've extended our lives, then telling us it's evil to unnaturally introduce contraception, which will lower your birth rate and, give your children a chance for a decent life. That's the kind of stuff that you don't want from religion. You want people treating each other and learning to treat each other the way they would like to be treated. We don't manage that, but we're in deep trouble.
Yeah, and it all comes back to culture.
That's right.
It's the culture, stupid. The Dominant Animal is the book, Human Evolution and the Environment, Paul Ehrlich and Ann Ehrlich. And, Paul, thanks so much for coming.
That's my pleasure. Thank you.
Great talking with you. Thank you. 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartmann Program on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Tom Hartmann.
Program, speaking from behind the good old working-class stainless steel microphone in Portland, Oregon, on the banks of the Willamette River. A few days before Congress passed its housing bill, writes Barbara Ehrenreich over at BarbaraEhrenreich.com and Alternet. A few days before Congress passed its housing bill, Carlene Baldamera of Taunton, Massachusetts, found her own solution to the housing crisis just a little over 2 hours in advance of the time her mortgage company, PHH Mortgage Corporation, may its name live in infamy, was to auction off her home. Baldamera killed herself with her husband's rifle. Suicide, the headline reads, "Suicide spreads as one solution to the debt crisis." Every day in America now, 7,000 to 8,000 families are being thrown out of their homes. As Barbara Ehrenreich writes, suicide is becoming an increasingly popular response to debt. James Sherlock's brilliant documentary, Maxed Out, features the families of two college students who killed themselves after being overwhelmed by credit card debt. And on it goes. It wasn't God or some abstract climate change that caused the credit crisis. Actual humans, often masked as financial institutions, did that. She says, I know it's so 1930s, but may I suggest a march on Wall Street? Which reminds me of this article that back in 2002, the BBC ran on their website. You can still find this over at the bbc.co.uk website. I mean, it's not on the homepage anymore, but you can dig down. The headline is "More Suicides Under Conservative Rule." Now, I am not, Paul Ehrlich and I were just talking about how we really need to get the planet down to 2 billion people. I am not suggesting that. He said, let's take 100 years to do it, and that's the appropriate way. But this seems to be the way that the dog eat dog. Darwinistic, Sir Francis Galton, the cousin of Charles Darwin, the economist, survival of the fittest folks, think it should work out. The suicide rate, writes the BBC, increases under conservative governments, research suggests. Australian scientists found the suicide rate in that country, Australia, increased significantly when a conservative government was in power. And an analysis of figures in the UK seems to suggest a similar trend. They analyzed statistics between 1901 and 1998, virtually the entire 20th century. They then looked at the political regimes dominating both state and federal governments. The researchers took into account periods of drought in World War II because of their economic and psychological impact, but after adjusting for these factors, the figures clearly showed the highest rates of suicide occurred when both conservative state and federal governments were in power. Conversely, the lowest rates of suicide occurred when state and federal governments were both labor. That would be the liberals. Middle-aged and older people are most at risk when the conservatives ruled both the state and federal government. I'm reading from the BBC. When the conservatives, this is a 100-year study. When the conservatives ruled both state and federal governments, men were 17% more likely to commit suicide than when labor was in power, women 40% more likely to kill themselves. The authors argue that conservative rule traditionally implies a less interventionist and more market-oriented policy than the labor rule. This may make people feel more detached from society, they added. Overall, they say, again, I'm quoting the BBC, bbc.co.uk, 18 September 2002, the headline, More Suicides Under Conservative Rule. Overall, they say, these are these researchers who looked at a 100-year, nearly 100-year period, 1901 to 1998, in two countries, Australia and the United Kingdom. Overall, they say, the figures suggest that 35,000 people would not have died had the conservatives not been in power. And then they go through and they break it out, you know, epic by epic. And then the New York Times, February 19, 2008, Patricia Cohen writing in the New York Times, the headline, Midlife Suicide Rises, Puzzling Researchers. A new analysis of the nation's death rates released recently by the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention found that the suicide rate among 45 to 50-year-olds increased nearly 20% during the first 4 years of the Bush administration, far outpacing changes in nearly every other age group. For women 45 to 54, the rate leapt 31%. The question is why? What happened in 1999 that caused the suicide rate to suddenly rise primarily for those in midlife? Gee, what could it be? Could it be the insane economic policies of the Reagans and Bushies? They give the example of this Miss Cronin who tried to commit suicide. After attempting suicide before, she checked into a residential treatment program not long before she died, but after a month her insurance ran out. Her parents had offered to continue the payments, but her sister Kelly Gifford said Ms. Cronin did not want to burden them. Ms. Gifford added, I think she just got sick of trying to be better. She was bankrupt. She committed suicide. It's the story that Barbara Ehrenreich is telling today. You can read it in Alternate. You can read it over at commondreams.org. The wonders of conservative economics. And it's getting even worse, by the way. Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. What's in this banking bailout bill? I'll tell you right after the break, and we'll take your calls.
This is Tom Hartman. Call Tom at
866-303-2270. People used to tell me once I was on top, the riches would flow evermore. Now with little warning, the cash flow has stopped. I'm feeling reamed out to the core. In mortgages and weapons, pork bellies and land, believe me, I made quite a killing. Now I need some help from my friend Uncle Sam. Brother, can you spare a couple billion? Hey, don't you remember I gave to your campaign? So throw me a bone to keep me alive. Those regular suckers can't appreciate the pain of having just one Jaguar to drive. Those big old welfare mothers in their big old Cadillacs, they don't know what poverty is. My kid needs a boob job, my girlfriend a wax, Now the tax man's here looking for his.
Oh, life is tough.
Don't call
so the mortgage bailout bill, a blank check for Fannie and Freddie. That's a bailout. And the CEO, I think it's Fannie Mae, the CEO makes $12 million a year, as I recall. They're going to make things even worse, frankly, by raising the size of the mortgages that Fannie and Freddie can guarantee from $417,000 to $625,000. The bailout is giving $4 billion as a cash block to states to purchase foreclosed properties. Actually, that part of it, I could argue that that would be a good thing. By the way, this is DealBreaker.com is a relatively conservative financial site that, you know, the question is, has anybody actually even read this 700-page piece of legislation? It doesn't seem like anybody has. It raises the maximum loan limits for FHA-conforming loans to $625,500. Again, you know, taking it up to the McMansion area, at least in most parts of the country. The bailout bill provides a tax refund for first-time home buyers for up to 10% of the home's purchase. This is going to encourage renters to buy homes, many of which they will be unable to afford, as the noted at DealBreaker.com. And it increases the down payment requirement for FHA loans. Now, you think that that's a great idea. You know, people really should put down enough money so that if the value of the house drops a little bit, they still have some money in the house. Well, it raises the minimum down payment from 3% to 3.5%. I think, frankly, it should be a 10% or 15%. But no, they don't want to do that. They don't want to do that. So that's why people hate the housing bill. 1-866-303-2270, our phone number. And, oh, before we get to your calls, though, if you can hang on just a second, folks on the line, moveon.org, this new ad, this is just absolutely marvelous. You hear all these voices. Of course, there are faces that go with them. But it works well, I think, on the radio as well. This 30-second ad for Obama.
I never thought it could happen to me.
I've been living with it for a while now.
I got it from her.
I mean, this could happen to anybody.
Anybody.
I have hope.
Hope.
That's true.
I'm sorry, Mom. I'm sorry.
For 8 years.
We all thought it was gone, and now it's back.
Hope. It could happen to you.
This is your brain.
And this is your brain on hope.
And the
Any
the,
questions?
So this is your brain. They hold an egg. And then this is
political action is responsible for the contents.
This is your brain on hope. They hold up a little chick. You know, it's just great. It's just great. And the other interesting thing about the whole Obama and goes off to Afghanistan. I have gotten this viral email from at least, well, God only knows how many. I have, you know, dozens of them anyway. With this battle captain. Jeffrey S. Porter, Captain Jeffrey S. Porter. He's actually with the National Guard. And he says, as you know, I'm not a very political person. I just wanted to pass along that Senator Barack Obama came to Bagram, Afghanistan, about an hour on his visit to the war zone. I wanted to share with you what happened. He got off the plane, got into a bulletproof vehicle, got to the area to meet with a major general. As the soldiers were lined up to shake his hand, he blew them off and didn't say a word as he got into the conference room to meet them. And he goes on about how basically Obama blew off the soldiers. Well, it turns out the Captain Jeffrey S. Porter wasn't even there. He didn't even bother to show up. This has been the New York Daily News, and this email has made it all over the place. It's on right-wing blogs all over the place. It's on a couple of politicians' websites. Now, and you go over to Snopes.com, and it's right up at the top. Now the Bagram captain is dialing back, having signed the viral email with his name, rank, and unit, a possible violation of military regulations. He says, I am writing to ask you to delete my email and not forward it. After checking my sources, information that was put out in my email was wrong. This email was meant only for my family. Please respect my wishes and delete the email. If there are any blogs you have an email portrayed on, I would ask if you would take that down, too. Thanks for your understanding. But the right wing has grabbed onto this thing, and it has gone viral in a huge way. Turns out Captain Porter wasn't even there. He claims Obama went to play basketball with troops, which isn't true. Obama went to the headquarter buildings to have meetings with the general, and then he flew to meet soldiers at Jalalabad. And it just goes on. This is another guy who actually was there, another officer. And he says, I am disgusted to be serving alongside a liar like Captain Porter. I hope he gets court-martialed for lying. So if you get one of these viral emails, and you will, if you haven't already, in fact, here is the sound of Barack Obama actually saying hi to the troops.
The
troops and State Department workers mobbed him, and he responded with brief remarks praising their service.
So, I don't care whether you are a sailor, a soldier, an airman, or a Marine, National Guard, a reservist, active duty, I don't care. We just want to say thank you.
Yeah, I wouldn't have used the phrase, I don't care. I would have said it doesn't matter. But nonetheless, you know, the sentiment was there and they got it. And he did meet with the troops. He met with a lot of the troops. And Andrea Mitchell now calling out John McCain on this ad, which says that basically Barack Obama is not patriotic, that the only reason he didn't visit the soldiers in wounded soldiers in Germany was because he couldn't bring a camera with him. And she says, this is a lie. This is just a lie. This new McCain ad.
As someone supporting John McCain, I've got to ask you about this new McCain ad. The McCain ad says literally that he could have gone, you know, that he did other things, Obama did other things, he could have visited the troops, but not with cameras. That literally is not true. Let me play a bit of Robert Gibbs, the spokesman for...
And she continues. She says, this is a lie. Here's Andrea Mitchell of NBC News saying that the new John McCain ad is a lie. Is McCain going to apologize for lying to us? I think we should be asking for it. We should be contacting his Senate office and saying, your new ad is full of lies. When are you going to apologize? Also, I'd like to know when the Obama campaign is going to issue a counter ad, you know, calling on this one. So, anyhow, Irene in Dearborn, Michigan. Thank you for calling, Irene. What's up? Irene, you are on
the
air.
Oh, yes.
Hi.
I'm calling about overpopulation.
Yes, Paul.
I came in late and missed your guest, but I remember Pearl Ehrlich way back when he was on Johnny Carson.
Mm-hmm.
I was convinced then. I'm even more convinced now.
You know, he was right, actually. He predicted a certain number of millions of people would die of starvation, and they actually have. They just haven't died of starvation in the United States.
Yeah. Well, I have two suggestions about how to control it, one controversial and one not. First of all, the next president should lift the ban on use of federal aid for birth control overseas, right. Item one. And item two is a controversial one. The planet is limited in resources. Anybody who wants to have a lot of children should be prepared to support them totally themselves. I think the government should limit the number of child dependents a person can take on his income tax, and should limit the number of other child subsidies that they have been giving out.
Well, at least...
People have a right to have children, but the society doesn't.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. At least limiting the income tax deduction to the first two kids. That's because you don't want to punish the children themselves. But that's an interesting point. And Irene, and thank you for the call. And I would take it even a step beyond that. I would point out that in those societies, in those cultures where women have relatively equal power with men, population does stabilize. So the most important thing we can do is work for women's rights. That's really the bottom line. Paul in Carbondale, Illinois, listening to WINI. Hey, Paul.
Hi, Tom. I'd like to talk about the this economy that runs on credit. And I'd like to point out that if we didn't have this trillions and trillions of dollars in debt, our economy would have collapsed a long time ago. But it's not real money. It's fake money. It's fiat money. It's totally computer generated. So if the economy can run on fake money, why can't we just cut out that thing and just produce for use and not profit? You talked the other day about the economy being like a musical chairs and someone loses. I say it's more like a Ponzi scheme. Someone's scraping stuff off the top and cut that off and just produce for use and not profit. And our economy could function.
Yeah, I actually opened my book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, with the story of, Albert Ponzi and how Ponzi schemes worked and how, you know, so much of our economy and the whole carbon-based thing is a giant Ponzi scheme. Absolutely excellent point, Paul, and thank you for making it. And I would say that we our economy isn't just based on credit; it's based on debt. Our dollar is based on debt, and that's because of the fractional reserve banking system. And frankly, I think we need to do away with that. We need to change that. We need to go back to what Abraham Lincoln advocated, and what Alexander Hamilton advocated, and have the Fed become part of the Treasury Department. In other words, we need to nationalize the Fed. We need to buy it back from the U.S. and international bankers and stockholders who own the Fed. We need to bring it under the Department of the Treasury and do away with the fractional reserve system and make it a real reserve system, and let's nationalize our own currency. Let's take it back. Canada did it for a few years, worked fine for them. And then the bankers got in and started lobbying, and they changed it all. I think we should do the same. And this, by the way, in all probability is going to be part of the platform of the Green Party this year. 45 minutes past.
The Tom Hartman Program. Visit us on the web at hartmanradio.com.
Our conservative alert for the day. White House spokesman Tony Fratto says George Bush may veto, get this, congressional negotiator. This is what Bush may veto. Congressional negotiators agreed yesterday to a ban on a family of toxins found in children's products, handing a major victory to parents and health experts who have been clamoring for government to remove harmful chemicals from toys. This is used for decades in plastic production. The chemicals are now thought to act as hormones and cause reproductive problems, especially in boys. Among other things, the legislation would also ban lead in children's products and give consumers access to a new database of complaints or accident reports for toys and other goods. The measure would allow stiffer fines for violation and enhanced enforcement of consumer safety laws. And Bush says, I think I might veto that. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man, we need a new president. Anna in Greeley, Colorado. Hey, Anna, what's on your mind today?
Hi there. I just wanted to ask you if you would, for two things, change that Darwin, social Darwinism, to actually Herbert Spencer.
Herbert Spencer, you're right. Thank you.
Yeah, I blame him because it's coming over and over again. It's been put down before.
Although Sir Francis Galton was very involved in that as well.
Wasn't he one of the
fathers of eugenics, as I recall?
It very well could be. I can't remember. I remember the name in that. Yes. Speaking of eugenics, you know, they're doing some kind of experiment on people's genetic propensity to do crimes again. I can't figure out why. They do it over and over again.
You know, that was the major theory that was put forth in the 1880s about Italians in the United States, and about Irish in the United States, and then in the 1910s about Italians.
Mm-hmm.
There were all these scientists who had purported to prove that the Irish are genetically predisposed toward crime, or prove that the Italians, and of course they've always, you know, for three centuries they've been talking about African American. It's all nuts. We're all just people here, thank you very much.
That's right. Well, it happened again in the 60s and 70s.
With the bell curve and all that.
Yeah, all that stuff. Uh-huh. Yeah. And it's just ridiculous.
It's junk science. It's just absolutely junk science.
Here's another thing that's kind of bothering me a lot. There are a lot of things that are bothering me a lot. One thing is, where is the oil going that we've been pumping out of Iraq, or Halliburton has been pumping out of Iraq for years now? Is it going to the more than 100 countries where we have established military bases?
It goes into world markets, Anna. And thank you for your call. I've got to move along, but there's this giant world pool of oil that basically pretty much all the oil produced anywhere goes into. Jim in Pittsburgh, listening to WPTT. Hey, Jim.
It's interesting. I got that email from that Porter guy, and I dismissed it right away because I knew what it was. But it's odd that no one brings up about McCain's visit to Pittsburgh when he was interviewed by John Delano there. And he told Mr. Delano that when he was in the concentration camp, that he named, when he was asked what his squadron names were, he named the Steelers Steel Curtain Defensive Line.
Right, and
well,
before
time,
he said he had named the Green Bay Packers.
Well, at that time, the Steelers line happened to be in high school or maybe just starting college. So what did he really tell the enemy if he's lying to us about even something like that? Yeah. You know, if Mr. McCain would shut his mouth a little and release the papers that he's holding up on the POWs and the missing in action people, maybe we'd get somewhere. Maybe we'd find out the truth about the real Mr. McCain.
Yeah, yeah. I think that there's a lot about Mr. McCain that we don't know. Thank you, Jim, for your comments. Let's see here. Nora in Minneapolis. Hey, Nora.
Oh, hey there, Tom. I talked to you before about the nuclear thing with Obama, and CNN came out and said, defined him as a nuclear power skeptic. And anyway,
Barack Obama has been a tepid supporter of nuclear power as a state legislator in Illinois. It's one of the areas where I disagree with him. I disagree with him strongly.
Anyway, what I wanted to talk about, I just wanted to say that because they defined it, and I believe that definition because he says that. He says, yeah. I would accept it if it could be fiscally feasible, sensible, yeah, and safe, and both of those are impossible, so
right,
that's his story. Yeah. But what I wanted to talk about was, I had heard over the weekend the actual creation of the Taliban was by the ISI, and did you agree with that?
I don't know.
The Inner Services Intelligence in Pakistan actually
right,
created
yeah,
the Taliban,
ISI,
and then
yeah,
of course they were used by Al-Qaeda, which was supplied by the U.S. to overthrow the Soviet Union, etc.
Yeah,
and then
just
now we have this big mess. Well, to me it goes partially of the solution of the problem in Afghanistan goes back to Milton Friedman came out in 1971 against the war on drugs,
mm-hmm,
and said that it wasn't the drug user who was immoral, as it was really the immorality was from making users into criminals. So basing
right
on that, and then he goes on, and his views were from libertarianism, and he said that, of course, you couldn't have an open market if you have the basic things,
what
the
does
things
that have to
like
do with
marijuana
the Taliban
and drugs that people want all the time are illegal. That's not an open market. So we've never tried an open market,
right?
Ever
yeah,
since he
yeah
suggested it.
And you know, I agree with Friedman that, and Nora, thanks for the call. I agree with Friedman that the war on drugs is crazy and insane, and it doesn't work. And prohibition has never been demonstrated to work, particularly when it comes to mind-altering substances. And I think that any kind of natural plant substances are, you know, they're part of the commons. They should be, you know, decriminalized at the very least. Artificially made substances, I still have a, you know, I still think that it's fine to have those be regulated. And, but that's, the point is that this has nothing to do with Friedman's so-called free market. That's a fantasy. 57 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Is Tom Hartman.
All right, so what's the deal with, why is it that it appears that this Republican war on science is working? The global change, I know this is going to make you crazy, Mark Morano, the global change, climate change deniers are gaining ascendancy now. 13% more Republicans believe that the Earth is, or fewer Republicans who believe that the Earth is warming. It's down to 49%. Fewer than half of all Republicans believe that the Earth is warming now, compared to 62% who believe that in January 2007. And only 2% fewer Democrats. But apparently this is a 13% drop in Republicans who believe that the Earth is warming. Mark Morano, why might that be?
Hey, Tom, thanks for having me on. Well, it's actually even better news than that. The Gallup poll in Earth Day showed that since 1989, there's been essentially no change in the overall public's concern about man-made global warming. It appears science wins out in the end. The abuse of science by many scientists is losing here in the end.
Well, let's talk about that. We're talking with Mark Morano. He's the communications director for James Inhofe's office, and James Inhofe, of course, on the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee, former chairman of that committee, epw.senate.gov/public. And Mark, you've got this blog posting or whatever it is all about Dr. Roy Spencer.
Roy Spencer came and testified. He's a former NASA atmospheric scientist who came and testified about his new studies, which will be peer-reviewed, showing a mostly natural cause of the temperature rise in the 20th century, which, depending on which global monitoring you look at, essentially ended in 95. There's been no significant warming. Roy Spencer has that. We just documented, actually, yesterday, a top Japanese scientist is now a skeptic, another U.N. Japanese scientist.
Well, let's just go back to Roy Spencer, because he's the guy you guys brought before Congress. He's the guy who is with the University of Alabama at Huntsville, the UAH version. And he's the guy that for 10 years gave the world wrong data that he himself and his partner had to go back and fix. And originally that data for a 10-year period was showing that there was a discrepancy between land measurements and satellite measurements. And they had to correct it. There's even a huge Wikipedia entry under satellite temperature measurements that lays the whole thing out.
Yes, I'm aware of that. Scientists.
This guy's a complete bozo,
Scientists always correct their data. They made a public correction. James Hansen owned NASA data.
His public correction, though, is that yes, it is warming.
No, that was at the time. Their recent data shows a marked cooling trend in the last year or two. In fact, using their data, I believe, when Hansen first testified, the NASA scientist, we've cooled since 1998 using the University of Alabama.
Let's just be really clear. We're talking with Mark Morano of James Inhofe's office.
Your talking points are old.
Roy Spencer is a guy who has ties to the George C. Marshall Institute, which is supported by industry, gets money from Exxon. He has said, and I'm quoting Roy Spencer, your scientist. He has said, quote, intelligent design as a theory of origins is no more religious and no less scientific than evolutionism. This is a guy who wouldn't know science if it bit him in the behind.
Now, do you really, Tom Hartman, want to go down as calling an award-winning? He won the NASA's, I think it's called the Goldschmidt Medal when he was there. In the 90s, you want to call him a bozo?
Yes, I do. I absolutely do, because for 10 years, this guy was consistently producing data, which he was putting out to the world, which was causing climatologists all over the planet to scratch their heads, because this was the only source of this data, and that were calling into question Michael Mann's study and the hockey stick data and all that other stuff, and it turns out that he was wrong. And he was not only was he consistently wrong, but his data was consistently skewed in the direction of industry that he's now taking money from. Yes, I'll call him a bozo.
Then you should be calling James Hansen a bozo, who received money, $250,000 from Hines, who had major data corrections at NASA. I can't believe you're reduced to going after an award-winning NASA scientist.
You have been, this guy is saying that Michael Mann's study with a hockey stick, which showed that there's this sudden increase in global temperature as a result of human activity over the last three decades, that this is nonsense. And in fact, you've cited that several times on this program. And in 2006, the U.S. National Academy of Sciences came out with a definitive conclusion, and they said, and I quote from the National Academy of Sciences, the Academy was asked by Congress, by the way, to assess the validity of the temperature reconstructions, including the hockey stick. The report states, quote, the basic conclusion of Mann et al. Was that the late 20th century warming in the Northern Hemisphere was unprecedented during at least the last 1,000 years. This conclusion has subsequently been supported by an array of evidence that includes both additional large-scale surface temperature reconstructions and pronounced changes in a variety of local proxy indicators, such as melting on ice caps and the retreat of glaciers around the world, end of quote. Once they got Roy Spencer's phony data out of this noise out of the system, all the scientists in the world are agreeing. And this is the guy that you're bringing before Congress, this guy who thinks that evolution isn't real, and you're saying, this is our best scientist. I think you got a problem, Mark.
Absolutely not. First of all, you're bringing cause and effect. Roy Spencer's satellite data had nothing to do with manned hockey stick or the NAS study you cited from 2006.
No, it was used to refute it.
Absolutely not. You use the global data from the United Nations, from East Anglica and the UK. They show the warming peaking in 1995, that was no significant warming since, peaking in 1998, no significant warming since 95. As far as the hockey stick, though, if you want to talk about that, multiple recent peer-reviewed studies have now debunked that. And even the NAS study you cite said many of the key claims by man's hockey stick were unsupportable. And when you're talking about the medieval warm period, I think there was something like 200 or 300 studies showing that to be warmer until man's hockey stick. It is so discredited that the UN didn't even opt to use it in the 2007 UN report.
Mark, we've got a planet that is warm. I, you know, when I was in Sudan on the border with Darfur, one of the we spoke with the president, the vice president of Sudan, the president of South Sudan, Salva Kiir. And he said one of the big problems that they have is that as a consequence of increasing desertification, as the deserts are moving south in sub-Saharan Africa, basically the Sahara Desert is moving south, as a result of global warming, it's driving people south into South Sudan, and there's all this conflict. And this is the excuse that the guys in the north are giving for some of the genocide that's going on. But there is a germ of truth to it, that all over the planet we're seeing, as a consequence of global climate change, extremes in temperature and changes in environments and changes in atmosphere that's leading to species loss, that's leading to desertification. We're looking at the planet being trashed. The planet has a fever. And guys like Roy Spencer, who's taking money from ExxonMobil, you're bringing him out and saying, isn't this wonderful? This seems to me, frankly, Mark, immoral.
First of all, when you talk about money in the climate, the money is all on your side of the fence. I mean, to the point of tens of billions versus, you know, maybe 50 million. The most cited number is 19.
Which corporation, Mark, is making tens of billions of dollars trying to stop global climate change?
The point is they're not using it for global climate change. Even ExxonMobil, the most anyone's ever accused them of giving to promote global warming skepticism is $19 million. Al Gore alone will spend $300 million putting politicians and celebrities in TV ads. So it's a drop in the bucket. It has no impact. For you to even mention it is embarrassing. And as far as the Sudan and all this extreme weather, study after study, if you go to epw.senate.gov, we have all the latest studies and scientists showing that extreme weather is not increasing, that it's only increasing in these computer models, which don't even pass.
Those people in the Midwest who got hit with the tornadoes, those people in New Hampshire where they've never had tornadoes before got hit with the tornadoes, all the people down in Louisiana, they were just hallucinating?
Your arguments are becoming vacuous. If you're using every extreme weather event, and you've told me on this show you can't use extreme cold events to prove, you know, we're not warming, and now you're using every tornado as somehow proof of global warming.
No, I'm looking
at... You're grasping at straws. If you look at the latest peer-reviewed studies, and if you look at the latest scientists that have come out, the first woman PhD meteorologist, Joanne Simpson, the Nobel Peace Prize winner for physics came out in June, the top Japanese scientists that I just mentioned, they just keep coming out and out. Most of these scientists have had it with all this hysteria. And
are you up to 20 of them now?
You're on the unscientific side of this debate.
25 of them? 30?
25 of them. No, we actually have now more than 10 times the number that signed off on the UN IPCC report, which is only 52 scientists. We're well over 500 in our Senate report. So let's say 10 times.
Oh, there's 23. Weren't there 2,300 scientists on the IPCC report?
If anywhere from 2,000 to 2,500. That includes all the bureaucrats, delegates. It includes the Greenpeace lead author. It also includes many of the...
Who were all the co-authors on that report. Yeah.
What's that?
Okay.
It also includes many of the skeptics in our report.
Mark, I got to say, I don't know what to say. I mean, I'm just astounded.
That's a bogus figure, if you decide it's 2,500. That's been thoroughly discredited. Check out our report of 400 dissenting scientists now.
If you're right, wonderful. If you're wrong, it's a disaster for our children. Isn't that something that gives you pause?
No, the greatest threat our global warming solution is that if you're right, there's nothing we should do to stop it. We're all doomed. The cap and trade won't work and Peter will kill it.
Okay, Mark Morano, you can read it at senate.epw.gov.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Dazzled them. You gave them an act with Global warming is an issue that my administration is very concerned about, deeply. Deeply, in a deep kind of concerned way. I start my day and I think about the warming of the globe and how we can get it warmer.
Cut.
You played them both right to perfection, despite the fact there's no connection. You razzle dazzle them, let those blue states complain.
Yes, and you'll recall good old Senator Ted Stevens, who refused to put oil industry executives under oath. Remember this little moment, this little blast from the past?
I shall not administer an oath today, and we look forward to questions. Senator Cantwell?
Mr. Chairman, I did send you a letter co-signed by 8 of my colleagues and asking that the witnesses be sworn in. This rare joint hearing...
I did not yield to make a statement. We're ready to go. We have a statement process.
Mr. Chairman, I would like the committee to vote on whether... We swear.
There will be no vote. That's not in order at all. It's not part of the rules that any vote can be taken to administer an oath. It's the decision of the chairman, and I have made that decision.
Get what he's fighting about here is to not put oil industry executives under oath so that they cannot be prosecuted for perjury if they lie to Congress. He wants them to be able to lie to Congress. And Maria Cantwell, the senator from Washington, is saying, no, we'd like them to tell the truth.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we swear in. The witnesses.
And I rule that out of order.
I second the motion.
Thank you very much. That's the last we're going to hear about that because it's out of order.
Mr. Chairman, could I just ask just for a little clarification here? If a senator makes this request and there's a second, why wouldn't we have a vote on that?
Because you can't vote to put in the rules something's not there. This is not a business meeting. There's no way to put this into the rules. This is a matter for the chairman to decide, and I've made the decision.
So Ted Stevens, back when the Republicans were in power, he said, we are not going to question these oil industry executives under oath. And they didn't. And the oil industry executives got to lie all day long if they chose. Well, Ted Stevens was put under oath before a federal grand jury, and it turns out that he lied. Ted Stevens, the Justice Department is probably going to announce within the next few moments, the story goes, this is from Reuters. Senator Ted Stevens from Alaska, the longest-serving U.S. Republican senator ever, was indicted Tuesday on 7 counts of making false statements, according to a federal grand jury indictment. U.S. Justice Department has scheduled a news conference for 1:20 p.m. Eastern Time. That would be 3 minutes ago. And to make an announcement regarding a significant criminal matter. A federal law enforcement official said the news conference would discuss the criminal charges against Stevens. 28-page indictment outlining the charges was released by the Justice Department right before the news conference. So, Ted Stevens, I guess, you know, what goes around comes around. It came around and bit him in the butt. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Richard in Kirkland, Washington, listening to Talk 1090. Hey, Richard.
Hi, how you doing? Nice talking to you again, Tom.
Thank you.
Listening to people argue about against global warming, I just had a couple of suggestions. When I talk to people that are skeptical, I just say, all right, maybe we're only half right.
Yeah.
And that usually stops them. They think, well, okay. And the other suggestion is just to say it's time to clean up the earth.
Yeah, the planet has a fever. I mean, Paul Ehrlich makes this point in his book, and thank you, Richard. Well said. The planet has a fever, and 7 billion, going on 7 billion people is what is producing that fever. Roy in Portland. Hey, Roy.
Hello.
Hey, you're on the air. Excuse me, Ray.
Yeah, Tom. I was on a blog and had this discussion about the 5,000 scientists that deny that global warming is happening.
Right.
And I got a hold of the list. It's on the internet somewhere. And if you look, those 5,000 scientists, the criteria are that they have a Bachelor of Science degree, and it doesn't matter what discipline.
Right.
And if you start looking up names, you'll find that they are employees of petroleum companies.
Yeah, this was the debate. The last time I went around with Mark Morano about this, I started, you know, I said, so this guy and this guy, and I quoted about 20 names or so, and I said, these scientists are all the scientists who are on your side. And he's like, yeah. And I said, well, here, each one of these guys took money from ExxonMobil or from, you know, one of the big industry think tanks. Ray, there is a campaign here, and the campaign is being run because there are billions of dollars at stake. That's the bottom line. Billions of dollars at stake. Andre in South Carolina. Hey, Andre.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Good, good. We just have a minute till the break. What's up?
Well, I think I understand the argument very well. I'm no scientist, but what I do see is that we should be able to admit that we've been duped by Republicans and Democrats. And recently, Republicans have been duped the most, and they're aware of this duping.
Yeah.
Now, they don't trust the mainstream media. The greening of the media is really counteractive, because a lot of people look at the media and know that it is full of deception. So by the major networks going green, it's not helping the case. Also,
so people just think that's part of the overall corporate campaign of deception sort of thing. But this is the funny number, or the strange number, or whatever. 77% of Americans believed global warming was real a year and a half ago, in January of 2007. 71% believed that in April of 2008. Of Republicans, it went from 62% believed that global warming is real down to 49%. Fewer than half of Republicans. 84% of Democrats get it. I mean, there's something big going on that has to do with the media, and it's people like Mark Morano working the refs. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Call him now at 866-303-2270.
Intelligent Talk Radio, 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, and congratulations to Coca-Cola. Never thought I'd say that. While other companies are shying away from the considerable costs involved, Coca-Cola announced Monday it is rolling out 10 heavy-duty hybrid trucks in South Florida, part of a national campaign to put 142 of these so-called green trucks on the road in North America in the next several weeks. And so here we go, Coca-Cola turning green. And, even if it's greenwashing, it's a step in the right direction. 866-303-2270, your telephone number, Ed in Hillsborough. Hey, Ed.
Hi, Tom. Good talking to you again. You know, it occurred to me that climate change denying wackadoodle guy really revealed his biases right at the end, because he offered him, you know, like a version of Pascal's wager. You know, if I'm right, then what have you got to lose, taking steps to try and stem global climate change?
Right.
And his response was basically that if the planet's getting warmer, then there's nothing we can do, which is total baloney, but it reveals his biases, because, in fact, most of what we can do involves getting off of fossil fuels. And
right.
In his worldview, that's inconceivable, you know, because he's tied, you know, he's hanging from the tit of big oil. You know,
Inhofe, by and large. By the way, I know who Pascal is. I've never heard of Pascal's what?
Pascal's wager. It has to do with whether or not there's a God in heaven. Basically the argument is that if you're on your deathbed and you're about to die, you might as well, convert to the faith, because what have you got to lose? You know,
right.
If you're in heaven, then you get to go to heaven.
Right. Oh, that's interesting. Pascal, a French mathematician?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Ed, thanks a lot for that. I appreciate it. That's, we have the smartest listeners on earth for this program. I am so pleased. Jenny in South Florida, listening on WINS. Hey, Jenny.
Hi. I just wanted to tell you guys that I've been watching these guys in Australia. They invented a way to generate electricity using magnets. What they do is they take magnets and they put the reverse polarity so that they push against each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then it spins, and it's perpetual motion. It never stops unless you stop it. And they've built these generators. They're working on generators right now that are large enough to power Sydney, Australia, from magnets. And they're even building one
hang on just a second, Jenny. All generators work with magnets, 100% of them, all of them. You have magnets, that if you take magnets and then you spin a coil within that magnetic field, that's how you produce electricity. That's how generators work.
Well, but they have a new technology, and it's completely free energy. Mm-hmm. They're building individual units for homes that should be ready in 2 years, actually.
Yeah, and they just want you to send them some investment money? Is that the deal?
I'm sorry?
Yeah, and they just want you to send them some. I'm sorry, I'm very skeptical.
Oh, no. Yes. They have a tremendous amount of investors right now, tremendous. Yeah. Yeah. And it's going to be $4,000 to $5,000 for individual units. And if you want to check it out, there's a website, or just go to YouTube, and you'll see it's a big thing in Australia. It's called, just type in free energy magnetic motor, and you will see the generators they built simply from using magnets. There's no fuel, no anything at all. And I think that that might be the way to go. It's very interesting to
me.
Well,
if it drains the magnetism out of the magnets and they end up flat, then you have to remagnetize the magnets, and that's putting energy into a magnet.
Well, you know, honestly, I'm not an engineer. I don't understand a lot of it, but I do know that it's getting a lot of attention in Australia. And one thing about Australia is I think they're leading the front when it comes to, global warming and what to do about it, because it's hitting them the hardest.
Yeah, they are.
They have politicians there that that have been voted right out of office because of, them not being.
Because they deny global warming, right? Yeah, because the interior of the country is being turned to desert, and the wildfires. We were there in Sydney when the first year that the wildfires were so bad. This was about 8 years ago, coming
exactly.
Right up against the edge of Sydney, and it was just totally freaking them out. Jenny, thanks for the call. Interesting. Dan in Missouri. Hey, Dan.
Yeah, on commondreams.org and Huffington Post, they had an Al Gore transcript. And one of the sentences, I have long supported a sharp reduction in payroll taxes with the difference made up in CO2 taxes. We should tax what we burn, not what we earn. This is the single most important policy change we can make.
Right.
So I think a lot of this global warming hullabaloo is really they want to install a new tax system. They don't want to reduce payroll taxes. They just want to have taxes on top of taxes. And that's how Barack Obama will continue having these forever wars and inflate the social welfare programs.
Okay, so it's all about a question for you, Dan. We're gonna, George Bush is gonna submit a budget that has about an $800 billion, when you include the money that's being borrowed from Social Security and the money for the war in Iraq, about an $800 to $900 billion debt deficit. In other words, his administration has spent almost $1 trillion more than we brought in this year.
Okay.
What do we do? How do we replace that money?
Well, how come the Democrats didn't stop funding the war?
It's the Democrats' fault because they didn't stop him?
No, what I'm saying to you, Tom, is...
But even without the war, it would be a $500 billion debt. The $480 billion that he's submitting does not have the war money in it. Who's going to pay for that?
So why doesn't Obama come out and say, I want all these carbon taxes on top of the payroll taxes that the government's already collecting?
I think he should.
Why doesn't he end the war immediately?
I think he should, too. I think he should. I think that, if you look at the administration, if you look at the debt, Reagan ran this country it was an absolute train wreck. When Reagan dropped the top tax rate from 71% down to 28%, the deficit exploded. It absolutely exploded. It went to $300 billion by the second year. And he had to toss another $130 billion on top of that he stole out of Social Security. It was the only way to begin hiding it. And we've had this disaster ever since then. Clinton came in, he raised taxes on the wealthy, and guess what happened? We had a balanced budget. In fact, we had a surplus. Bush had a surplus the first year that he came into office. And so he drops taxes again, and boom, we're out of money. Don't you think that we should be paying what we're spending? That we should be have an income equal to our expenses?
Do you think the American public is going to deal with paying, say, another dollar or two extra on a gallon of their gas for your guy's big war on global warming?
If they pay no income taxes, I think that they would, if we were to actually do what Al Gore is suggesting, you're not answering my question, but if we were to do what Al Gore is suggesting and not have a payroll tax so that all working people who earn less than $97,000 a year suddenly get about an extra 10 or 12% in their paycheck, and then the price of gasoline goes up by a buck, I think most people would probably take that deal.
No, they're not going to reduce the payroll taxes. Give me a break, Tom. But you know what? We'll just agree to disagree. You have a good day, sir.
All righty. Thanks a lot, Dan. Appreciate the call. Interesting. Let's see here. Shannon in Kansas. Hey, Shannon.
Hey, Tom.
Yeah, I wanted to comment on the person who just called in concerning the perpetual motion machine in Australia.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a free ride, is what
yeah,
I was trying to tell her.
No such thing as a free ride. Violates the first law of thermodynamics and or the second law of thermodynamics. And, I mean, I'm looking at a picture of a perpetual motion machine from 1660. It's a woodcut of a perpetual motion machine. They've been trying to do this forever.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist. It'll never exist, and it's very important that people realize that it's not going to exist. In fact,
and be very careful when the inventors of them come and say, and this is really
exactly.
great, and a lot of people are investing, and how'd you like to buy $50 worth of stock or $100
exactly.
worth of stock or $1,000 worth of stock? Yeah, Shannon, thanks a lot for the call. I you know, that's why I said my first response was, how much do they want you to invest? Let's see, Justin in Woodland Hills, California. Hey, Justin.
Hey, Tom, how you doing? I don't know if you touched on the Department of Justice report that was released yesterday by, I think, the Inspector General.
Yeah, we did at some length yesterday. And,
oh, yeah.
and the thing that boggles my mind about this report comes out and says Monica Goodling and several others, but she's the most prominent one, broke the law, right? It says that
Absolutely.
They broke the law. And I read the article in the Washington Post and all the way through, and I read the article in the New York Times all the way through, and in neither case, in neither one of them, did I see any reference at all to asking the question, is she going to be prosecuted?
I don't think that'll ever be asked. And it's funny. I mean, it's not
It's just an assumption. Oh, it's the Bush administration. There won't be any prosecution.
Yeah, well, I'm assuming that because look at where it's gone so far. No one's been really prosecuted except for Scooter. But, I mean, we know where that ended up. But the thing I find amazing is she's a young lady. She's, what, 33 and was in charge of hiring, you know, senior federal prosecutors, and you know, look at the subversion that's gone on with that.
This is what she said before Congress. This is her testimony.
In your testimony, you indicate that you have, quote, may have taken inappropriate political considerations into account on some occasions. Do you believe that those political considerations were not just inappropriate, but in fact illegal?
The best I can say is that I know I took political considerations into account on some occasions.
Was that legal?
Sir, I'm not able to answer that question. I know I crossed the line.
She's a lawyer.
What line?
I know.
Legal?
I crossed the line of the civil service rules.
Rules, laws. You crossed the law on civil service laws. You crossed the line on civil service laws. Is that right?
I believe I crossed the law lines, but I didn't mean to. I mean,
okay.
I didn't mean to. I just, you know, Alberto Gonzalez told me to do it.
It's amazing. And also, too, you look at Kyle Sampson. He openly admitted to caging. Ohio, and then he was supposed to be appointed to, I believe, the federal prosecutor in Arkansas, and he's a rogue protege, he said he would not accept the job if he had to go before Congress under oath to be confirmed.
Right.
I mean, it just stuns me that people accept this, and the conservatives and the Republicans accept this. I mean, are we going to do laws or not?
Yeah, well, see, increasingly the Republicans don't give a damn about the law, and the Democrats have, you know, for some reason, they've decided that it's politically not real wise to stand up for the Republicans, which strikes me as nuts, but that's the decision they've made. 45 minutes past the hour.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at HartmanRadio.com.
Burning up the atmosphere and cutting down the trees, the billion-dollar bombing of a nation on his knees. Anyone not marching to their tune, they call it treason. Everyone says God is on his side. See the lightning, hear the cries of the wounded in a world in holy war. Mortal thunder from the skies, killing everything they say they're fighting for. Broken babies, broken homes, broken-hearted people dying every day. How'd this happen? What went wrong? Don't blame God, I swear to God, I heard him say, not in my name, not on my ground. I want nothing but the ending of the war.
51 minutes past the hour. Time for Ellen Ratner will be with us in just a moment. But first, our Richard Nixon moment for the day. This is from his speech in 1968.
For 4 years, this administration has had the support of the loyal opposition for the objective of seeking an honorable end to the struggle.
In Vietnam.
Never has so much military and economic and diplomatic power been used so ineffectively. And if after all of this time and all of this sacrifice and all of this support, there is still no end in sight, then I say the time has come for the American people to turn to new leadership not tied to the mistakes and the policies of the past. That is what we offer to America. Look at our problems abroad. Do you realize that we face the stark truth that we are worse off in every area of the world tonight than we were when we've had enough of big promises and little action? The time has come for honest government in the United States of America. And there is only one answer to such a record of failure, and that is a complete house cleaning of those responsible for the failures on that record.
Richard Nixon, 1968. Ah, yes. Ellen Ratner with us with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Hey, Ellen, how's that for an intro?
Well, that's quite an intro. I've got to tell you, the big intro today is Senator Stevens getting indicted on 8 counts, Jay? 7 counts.
7, yeah.
7 counts. It's really quite amazing. One of our young staffers walked by Senator Hillary Clinton, asked her the question to respond to this, and she just walked on. Acknowledge.
Gloating. Well, we played a clip earlier of Ted Stevens when Maria Cantwell, when he was chairman of the Environment and Public Works Committee, I think it was, and they were. This is when they had the oil executives testify before Congress, and Maria Cantwell said, "You know, let's swear these people in, so they have to tell us the truth." And he fought her, and you know, for a minute, and finally, you know, slammed down the gavel and said, "We are not going to swear these people in," and they were not. Their testimony was not under oath, but he apparently gave testimony under oath before a grand jury and apparently lied to the grand jury.
Well, yeah, what's amazing about Stevens is you're talking about a guy who was elected in 1968.
Wow. Yeah, he's 84 years old right now. He's been in the Senate for a long time.
I mean, he would probably spend the rest of his life in prison, because once the Justice Department indicts you, you know, it's almost impossible. What, 95% of people lose on a federal case?
Oh, I didn't know that.
That's very high. I mean, that's why people like Bob Ney and those folks plead. They get you so that you plead, and then because if you have to try a case, it's millions of dollars, and you generally lose.
Right. You're up against all the resources of the federal government.
This is
what happened to Don Siegelman.
I mean, that's true. What was he going to do? And look what happened to him.
Yeah.
Dana Perino, before the president left today for Ohio, Euclid, Ohio, next to my hometown, small suburb of Cleveland, Ohio, talked about the fact that she sort of sent a couple barbs in the way of the Democrats and said, well, they're leaving for August recess at the end of the week. There's been proposals for energy, and she said, we need to open up energy resources in ANWR, the continental shelf, shale, and we have to streamline the ability of building refineries. The president tomorrow is having a cabinet meeting. He's going to make remarks, we think, in the Rose Garden afterwards, and he's going to be talking about energy, which Dana Perino says is America's greatest concern. Well, it's been America's greatest concern for a while, but the first time that they were asked that. She was also asked about people driving less, and she said, well, people want to drive less. You know, there are a lot of people who think that's good for the environment. But she said, listen to this one. It proves that markets work. Laws of supply and demand reign supreme.
Yeah. Yeah, and we had T. Boone Pickens on the program yesterday, and you know, who I would probably, if you asked him, he'd probably say, yeah, markets are wonderful, supply and demand. But what he wanted all of our listeners to do is call Congress and renew an energy tax credit so that, you know, it would be more profitable for him to do what he's doing and to build electric power lines. The government, our tax dollars, build electric power lines so that his, you know, and I'm conflicted about it because, you know, the billionaires are going to get multi-billions more and yet, it's green power. And it's like, why aren't we doing this? Why aren't communities doing this? Why aren't states doing it? Why isn't the main reason is because the Republicans over 30 years have bankrupted us.
Yeah, Dana also said something very interesting, and they were talking about the highway trust fund and the highway bills, and she said
right. There's
apparently a major question about whether states can charge tolls on interstate highways.
Hmm. Well, yeah, because the interstate highway system is federally supported. So that makes a certain amount of sense.
Right.
But the big problem that the states have right now is because people are using less gasoline and gas taxes are all, they're not a percentage of the price of gas. They're a fixed amount, you know, 11 cents, 12 cents, whatever it is in the states. Their revenues are crashing and they're running out of money to fix their own roads. So
that's why they're talking about all this privatization. Give me a break.
Yeah. Amazing. Ellen Ratner, talkradionews.com. Thanks a lot, Ellen.
Thank you.
57 minutes past the hour. Coming up next, how the Republicans are right now, as we speak, fixing the 2008 election. Greg Palast will be with us. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, this got my attention. In Swing State, Colorado, by the way, welcome back to the third hour of our program. In Swing State, Colorado, the Republican Secretary of State conducted the biggest purge of voters in history, dumping a fifth of all registrations. Yes, their color. In Swing State, Florida, the state is refusing to accept 85,000 new registrants from voter drives. Guess their color. In Swing State, New Mexico, half of the Democrats of Mora, a dirt poor and overwhelmingly Hispanic county, found their registrations disappeared this year, courtesy of a Republican voting contractor. In Swing States, Ohio and Nevada, new federal law is knocking out tens of thousands of voters who lost their homes to foreclosure. Greg Palast, the guy, of course, GregPalast.com, the man when it comes to all things investigative reporting, pulling all this stuff together. Greg, welcome to the show.
Glad to be with you, Tom.
If this is true, this is at the very least a crime, or at the very least, you know, it's something that everybody should be talking about. We should be shouting from the rooftops, and at the most, a crime that somebody should be prosecuted for.
Well, unfortunately, for those who know Greg Palast's work as, you know, investigator of elections manipulations, that, you know, a lot of this is some possibly legal under a horrendous law called the Help America Vote Act, which George Bush signed in 2002. And, of course, when George Bush tells you he's going to help us vote, look out.
Right, plus this recent Supreme Court decision.
Yeah, and one of the problems is that in 2006, brand new provisions of that law kicked into effect, and almost no one has taken notice of it. One of the only experts who's really on top of it is law professor Bobby Kennedy Jr., who is working with me. We're investigating this. I'm flying around the country investigating and filming. And like you say, it should be shouted from the rooftops, because I find that when you turn on the lights, the cockroaches run to the walls. When you expose this stuff, it does tend at least to get partly corrected. And I want to warn voters. I mean, we're looking at, for example, in the state of Colorado, this kind of mass, what I call kind of a voter registration pogrom almost. The Secretary of State is a Republican. And by the way, this is a crucial, crucial swing state, which is why the Democrats are holding their convention there. It's right on the edge. And what this guy did was he basically voided all the voter registration, said you have to re-register. We're sending out cards. Now, this is a kind of legal form of what a voting trick that used to be called caging. You send someone a letter. If they don't respond back, you remove their registration. Well, guess who doesn't have has problems getting their mail? The rural poor, Hispanics, Guys that we sent to a place called Iraq who may not be at their home address but can legally vote from Iraq, but their mail goes, you know, doesn't, because this mail cannot be forwarded, by the way.
Right.
People, poor people who vote, they will still be in the same voting district. They have the right to vote. We know that this results in mass purges of Hispanic voters. In fact, I was just talking to the Secretary of State, the Democrat, the Republican, Deborah Bowen. And she,
Deborah Bowen in California,
California, who's trying to undo a similar type of damage created by her Republican predecessor, a guy who dumped 14,000 refused 14,000 new registrations in just 6 weeks, in his first 6 weeks in office in 2006, in just Los Angeles County. I mean, we are talking hundreds of thousands of votes getting lost. Now, Colorado is the worst state on this order, and it's a swing state, but you'll see that I'm going through Florida, New Mexico. These are all swing states.
Ohio, Nevada.
I mean, Kennedy was really upset about, has been really upset about the problems of foreclosure knocking out voters, especially in two states. And the two states with the worst foreclosures are both swing states, Ohio and Nevada, 1 in 100 homes. Now, you have to understand, that's a whisker-close state for November.
Right.
And if you lose 1 in 100 homes, who is losing their homes? Well, we know who's losing their homes. That doesn't mean that they're illegal voters. You don't lose your vote because you lose your home. And
well, you do in Ohio and Nevada.
Well, yeah. Well, they're trying to – I have to say that the Republican officials in Nevada are kind of body-blocking people getting their registrations taken care of. In Ohio, there are some – the Pew Foundation and some officials are actually working very hard to see if they can undo some of this damage. On the other hand, you have Republican county clerks who are trying to make it difficult for people to re-register or get their ballots if their mailbox has been kind of, you know, welded shut.
Yeah. Greg Palast, in 2000, we saw somewhere between 20 and 90,000, you probably know the exact number. I've heard numbers all over the map of African-Americans who were removed from the voting lists before the actual election happened by Catherine Harris because they happened to have names that were similar to those of African-American felons in Texas.
Yeah.
And what was the – have we ever figured out the final number of the people who were knocked off the list?
Yeah, I have. That was, you know, my investigation for BBC television, and
right.
We discovered that 94,000 voters were targeted, overwhelmingly African-American voters, Democratic voters, about 80% of them, of the voters targeted. The ultimate number that were illegally, all those were illegally purged, illegally marked for purge. The number who ultimately lost their vote, we can't tell, but we do know it's in the tens of thousands.
Right, so and this is the state that George Bush allegedly won by 526 votes or something like that. I mean,
yeah,
so
and that's easy to do if you knock out, you know, 20,000-30,000 black voters. I could win a state that way for Godzilla. You know, I mean, as a registered Republican.
So this seems to be the strategy. Now this is this is Paul Weyrich. He's a Republican strategist. He's been he was an advisor to Nixon. He was an advisor to Reagan. Paul Weyrich has been around for, actually maybe not Nixon, but he's been certainly since Reagan. He was one of the major guys who brought Reagan to power. He's been active in the campaigns of both the Bushes. And here's Paul Weyrich speaking in a church to a group of Republican activist Christians.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Now, that was 15 years ago. The Republicans are still pursuing that strategy. The only way they can win is by knocking out voters.
Right. It's the non-vote, what Kennedy and I are calling what's going to determine the election in November is not the vote, but the unvote. The non-vote, the number of votes that Republicans can knock out. I spoke to an expert at the University of Minnesota who said, look, the registration numbers and the demographics make it impossible for a Republican to win. I said, that's if people get to keep their registrations. We have had literally millions of registrations dumped off the voter roll this year. As fast, and I was talking to Jesse Jackson about it, he's complaining as fast as he's registering new voters, they are dumping the voters off the list. They are rejecting their new registrations. This is brand new. You used to be able to fill out a form, a yellow card, and you were registered.
Now the Supreme Court has ruled that it's legal to require proof of citizenship, which means that you've got to go find your birth certificate or your passport or your...
And who has passport? That's the point. Now, yes, you can vote if you bring
3% of Americans have a passport.
20% of Americans, and they ain't guys...
No, I think it's 3% of Americans.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
You know, it's 20% of Americans, something like that. And it's and the thing is, which Americans? It's not kids from the barrio coming back from their ski trips in the Alps who have passports.
Right.
We know who has passports. That's why they want these laws. And you know what it's all about? The excuse that's given, Tom, by Weyrich, by Karl Rove, by all these characters, is that they are stopping massive voter fraud.
Right.
Do you know how many convictions there have been of people combine all the aliens convicted of voting illegally, combine all the people who've been convicted of double voting, combine all the people who've convicted of falsely voting using someone's identity. Do you know how many have been convicted in 5 years?
I guess it's fewer than a dozen.
It's fewer than five a year in the United States of America. Five people.
And they never did nail Ann Coulter, did they?
No. And the truth is that about 5 million people will lose their vote to catch the five people who have broken the law. I want to go back again. 5 million people are going to lose their votes because of new rules to catch five people who've broken the rules.
Right. And I tell you, Greg, every time I do this topic on this show, I get Republicans calling up going, but Lou Dobbs said that those aliens are they've got driver's licenses and that automatically puts them on the voter rolls and they're going to vote. All these illegal Mexicans, et cetera, et cetera.
Give me their names. I'll go bust them myself, but I don't see them.
Yeah. Well, I don't see it happening. What I do see happening is the theft of another election, and it concerns me tremendously. You can learn all about it over at gregpalace.com. And, of course, pick up all of his books. Greg Palast, a great guy and a brilliant investigative journalist and author. Greg, thanks so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Good talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Save the day. Malcontents without 5 cents want us to cut our pay.
Yes, bosses unite!
We only make 500 times as much as our average worker drones. We work just as hard and we too sometimes need to paint our homes. The pressures are incredible and no one seems to care. We moved our plants to Haiti and now we have to move from there. They're clamoring for more than a dollar a day from Malaysia to Mexico. At that rate, pretty soon there'll be no place for us to go. Bosses of the world unite, don't just sit there, fight, fight, fight. Don't be trampled by the masses, they think
they
can kick
our asses. You tell them, Jim Turrett. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Give us a shout. Mike in Golden, Colorado. Hey, Mike, what's on your mind today?
Well, what you and Greg Palace were talking about last time, there is something that you didn't mention that could be potentially worse, if it happens, than demographics-based caging.
What's
that? All this warrantless wiretapping that's been going on.
Yep.
There's been massive amounts of it. They've accumulated huge databases. That data, if it was mined, could potentially be used to smart bomb the electorate.
How so?
Well, if they have enough of the right kind of data, they can tell who's likely to vote Democratic and who's not.
Oh, just by the websites people are visiting would be an easy way. I mean, if they're forget the wiretaps, look at the internet taps, you know, because usually they're doing that at the same time. And if you've got somebody whose homepage is Huffington Post versus somebody whose homepage is, you know, CNSNews.com, you pretty much know which way they're going to vote.
Exactly. And it was actually email and internet tapping that I was thinking of.
Yeah, interesting. Very interesting.
And
Mike, thanks.
Would be not only much more dangerous, but it'd be harder to detect because it's not. Because they could pick people in the middle of, you know, Republican neighborhoods that were going to vote Democratic.
Yeah, yeah, you're right, Mike. Thanks a lot for that. I think, Deborah in Albany. Hey, Deborah.
Good morning. Hey. Well, you've sufficiently alarmed us. Now, what I want is some specific direction. Is there a single federal standard where these people who've been dumped can re-register?
Is the passport sufficient?
What should we be doing?
Here's the problem, Deborah. The Constitution gives the power to determine who can vote and who can't vote to the states. It's against the Constitution. It's unconstitutional for the federal government.
So each state has a standard.
That's correct. Now, there was a recent Supreme Court decision that upheld the right of, as I recall, 14 states, maybe 17 states. We've got a number of states now that have introduced into their state law the requirement of citizenship in order to vote. And that was taken to the Supreme Court because the Republicans obviously are going to use this to say, now you have to prove that you're a citizen when you show up to vote, so you've got to bring all your documentation with you. And a lot of people just can't do that, particularly the elderly, particularly the poor, you know, et cetera. And so this went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court ruled that citizenship was a legal. It was not unconstitutional for a state to require that. But they didn't establish that as a federal benchmark. They simply said that the states could do that. So, there are no federal standards. It's up to the states. And what Greg Pallas is doing, by the way, and I should have plugged this when I had him on the air, but here I am a few minutes later. Greg and Bobby Kennedy are out there doing this, and over on his website, gregpallas.com, he's trying to raise some money to help fund his, you know, peripatetic adventures, his traveling around the country, documenting this stuff, and I think it's a worthy cause. So,
Presumably recent immigrants might have their citizenship documents. Elderly, if they're receiving Social Security or some other government program, might be able to establish citizenship, right?
Probably not, actually. Just the fact that you've received Social Security does not mean that you're necessarily a citizen. I mean, people.
Well, then do we need to sue the voter registrar?
It depends
who's
on
doing the dumping.
It depends on the state and the jurisdiction. In Colorado, you've got a Secretary of State who's a Republican who's gung-ho for this thing, plus you've got individual counties where it's happening. The same thing in Florida. You had individual counties that were some that were very aggressive on this and others that were pushing back where you know I forget the title of the person at the county level who is the registrar of voters, I think there's
right.
You know, variation on that. And then you've got at the precinct level, you've got people who in some states have the ability to dump voters and other places where they don't. So
physically re-registering with proof near the deadline before the election,
right,
so that they can't be rolled up and dumped again, might be an approach.
Yeah, and the problem is most people don't have the time to go check it out. They don't have the time to show up. If a card comes in the mail that says, "Are you really registered?" they think that it's, you know, some kind of phony thing. They're not going to send it back. It might be telemarketing. Who knows? And that's actually the caging. It is absolutely bizarre, Deborah, the extent to which the Republican Party over the last 15, 20 years has gone to prevent people from voting. Broadly speaking, knowing that their base, the wealthy and the very wealthy, are going to, you know, slide through this stuff with no problem at all.
And they haven't been convicted of caging yet, to my knowledge.
You know, you had, I believe it was Monica Goodling, it might have been Sarah, what's her name, who came before Congress and said, this guy working for Karl Rove, he was in charge of caging. And everybody in Congress is going, oh, what's caging? Well, you know, the Democrats are, what's caging? And it's like, say what? Deborah, thank you very much. Yes, caging has been going on. This is Karl Rove was doing this when he was in his 20s. Caging is where you're dumping people off the voting rolls using the mails. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Information is power, so keep the media in check. Hey, Jennings and Rather, what we make, and they'll figure what the heck. As long as they run what we supply, the boobs at home will see just what will keep them hypnotized in front of the TV. Bosses of the world unite, solidarity in our fight. Thank God the stockholders have no clue how we're ripping them off too. They chat upon us long enough, the Naders and Hightowers. So what if Michael Eisner makes 200,000 hours? Fair is fair, and we'll be there to stand shoulder to shoulder and never feel a twinge of guilt till we get a little older.
Yes, bosses of the world unite. Welcome back. 35 minutes past the hour, and Silvio Berlusconi. Our Berlusconi alert for the day. What do you do? Well, you're a small-time crook, an entrepreneur who bought a newspaper and a radio station, and then another radio station, and then a television station, and then another radio station, and another television station, and another newspaper, and another radio station. Pretty soon he bought a radio network, and then a television network, and then another radio network, and then another television network, and then another newspaper, and pretty soon he owned 95% of all the privately owned media in Italy. And then, what did he do? He ran for prime minister. And guess what? By some miracle, he was elected. Elected. Silvio Berlusconi. So anyhow, he's back in office. And he has just pushed through legislation, 161 to 120 in the Senate, the Italian Senate. He just pushed through legislation that would allow the army to patrol streets alongside the police. Ain't that sweet? Doesn't it just remind you of Mr. Mussolini all over again? The rationale for this legislation, by the way, is that they are going to round up illegal aliens. That's what it's all about. He says, we got to get these illegal aliens. And in fact, the illegal aliens will serve more jail time than non-illegal than citizens. Under new laws approved by the Senate, illegal immigrants convicted of crimes now face jail sentences one-third longer than those for Italians. And that seemed to, you know, resonate with people. And so they said, and by the way, if you want to let the streets be patrolled by the army, no problem. Mr. Berlusconi, going down the road that Mr. Mussolini went down before him. 866-303-2270, your telephone number. Jane in Albuquerque, New Mexico, KABQ. Hey, Jane, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to know, or just a thought, the polls seem absurdly close between McCain and Obama. Obama should be way ahead, and I'm wondering if this purging of the registration rolls isn't skewing pollsters' research.
No, it wouldn't, because most people who are purged don't realize it until they get to the ballot box,
their base of who they research, if they're using people that have voted before as their base.
Their registered voter database?
Right.
That's an interesting question. I don't know if they're determining that people are registered voters by asking them, are you a registered voter, or whether they're doing it because they are able to work off a database of registered voters. I don't think that the database of registered voters is public information. I don't think that it's the kind of thing that a company can buy.
Well, somewhere they get the likely voters. I don't know if they get that from the parties or the clerk's office.
I think they ask people. I think they ask, or they ask a couple of questions that cause people to identify themselves in ways that they would guess would be likely voters. My guess, Jane, and the reason why the polls are so close is because most Americans don't pay attention to politics until the month before the election. And it's going to be, you know, after the conventions, then we're going to see some changes. Jane, thank you very much for the call. We'll see how this all shakes out. Laurie in Seattle. Hey, Laurie.
Hi. I just wanted to point out that it looks like Indiana's going to be a state in play this year, which is kind of exciting for the people of Indiana. And they are requiring some of the most stringent laws about voter ID.
Wasn't it Indiana's state law that started the Supreme Court case?
Well, I don't know about that, but I do know that they're requiring pictures. And I know that Indianapolis quite a bit of those people, especially in the inner city, you know, use mass transportation or use the bus system. And
well, my mother wouldn't be able to vote in Indiana because she hasn't had a driver's license in 40 years.
Right.
So
a lot of elderly too.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. This is a slow motion disaster. It's coming right down the road at us. Nancy in Portland. Hey, Nancy.
Oh, hi. Thanks for everything to you and your lovely wife and the whole crew. And one thing we can do about rampant Republican election fraud is to get the movie Uncounted by David Earnhardt.
Mm-hmm.
The website is www.uncountedthemovie.com.
Yeah.
And that will shine the light. It'll infuriate you.
Yeah, you're right. Another good one is Unprecedented. There's the which I'm in, but it's also and it's a great, and there's a couple of very good documentaries out there. Nancy, thanks for pointing that out. Uncounted is a good solid one, and you know, people should know about it. Joan in Petaluma. Hey, Joan.
Oh, hi, Tom. One thing I wanted to mention, because I worked in California at the precincts, that if you have moved and you're not in that precinct, you can fill out a provisional ballot. It's a pink ballot, and your vote will count.
Well, actually, your vote may not count. There were over 100,000 provisional ballots in the Ohio election that John Kerry lost that to this day have not been opened and counted. Provisional ballots are usually not open until after the election if there's a dispute.
Oh, well, that's discouraging.
Yeah, I mean, it varies from state to state, but that certainly was the case in Ohio. The Republican Secretary of State decided not to count the provisional ballots because Kerry had lost by, 120,000 or 130,000, and the provisional ballots was just a little over 100,000. So he figured it would have to be 100% for Kerry, so why bother? And that was the logic that the Kerry campaign used in not contesting it. And it was false logic because, you know, there were so many other questions about the vote. But in any case, Greg Pals refers to provisional ballots as placebo ballots, and I think that that's a good one. If you have moved, it's important to get down to your local Secretary of State's office or contact the Secretary of State and re-register in your new location. Joan, got to move along. Thank you very much for the call. Deborah in Beaverton. Hey, Deborah.
Hi, we were talking earlier this morning local. I have one thing to talk about, and that was something that happened on July the 1st when they were actually doing a committee hearing about the automobile industry for the miles per gallon increase.
Right.
For cars.
Cafe standards.
Right. The thing is that the committee then in Washington that was doing this, the chairman was asking how many of the fleet would be electric, and the gentleman who was speaking from the automobile industry went about explaining all of this, and basically what they were working on was a model of a specific amount of money per gallon as to whether or not it would offset the money that they would have to do to retool and everything else in order to be able to make those larger amount of electric cars.
Right.
And so the committee chairman asked the question, and what is the amount of per gallon in price of gas are you using? And he was using the model of 215 per gallon. And the chairman looked at him and said, we're not paying that now.
Right.
We're paying
yeah.
more than that now. The
yeah.
other thing that I wanted to bring up was I called Obama's office in Chicago to explain that we out here in the progressive world and so forth appreciate his website and they're speaking to the choir, but we need tools to be able to respond. And they said that Senator Obama will be responding, but he will not be responding in Senator McCain's time frame.
That's very interesting. Deborah, thank you for sharing that. That's very interesting because I'm frankly very concerned about this smear ad, the Swift Boat ad that John McCain is running right now, and the fact that there hasn't been a strong and forceful response from the Obama campaign to it. And it concerns me tremendously. David in Los Angeles. Hey, David.
Hi. I believe the voter registration rolls are available. I think they charge money for them, and that's at least in Los Angeles County. At least it was in 1992 when I ran for office.
Oh, it was. Okay. All righty. I didn't know. So thank you for correcting me on that. I appreciate it. And so in all probability, then I guess we'd have to ask the polling agency. But if the polling companies are using the actual registration rolls and the registration rolls have been purged, then, yeah, that might actually affect the outcome of a poll. Kevin in Fort Lauderdale. Listen and wins. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, Tom, I'm seeing a common thread that runs through a number of news items that have broken relative to this thing, you know, culminating with Greg Palast's story, you know, from the shooting at the Unitarian Church.
Right.
You know, to the story about the feeding of talking points to Fox.
By the way, if I may interrupt you just real quickly, Kevin, today the story on this guy who shot these two people and killed these two people in the Unitarian Church yesterday is that when they checked his home, he had Sean Hannity's book, he had Rush Limbaugh's book, and he had Michael Savage's book, Liberalism is a Mental Illness. He had these three books on his bookshelf.
You know, it's insidious, Tom. You know, a specific, and I know you agree with a specific teaching technique, classical technique called inculcation, is at the heart of brainwashing.
Yeah.
And, you know, with this manipulation of the terms liberal and conservative, to the point it really, subconsciously, I think people don't even think of issues as being Democratic or Republican anymore. They think of it as being liberal and conservative. And then when they define liberal and conservative, you know, they have their cake and ate it too, because they define them in such, you know, grossly polarizing terms. One is good and one is evil. There's not even any room for debating if I believe you're fundamentally evil and not just having a different point of view.
You're absolutely right. And that's the problem, Kevin. Yeah, no, it is. Insidious is the perfect word, Kevin. Thank you. And it's what has been the marching tune, the song of right-wing talk radio for 16, 17, 18 years. 45 minutes past the hour. 866-303-2270. Tom Hartman.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at hartmanradio.com.
Down the street one day, almost got run down by a little girl jabbering to her friend in town. Lay that cell phone down, girl, lay that cell phone down. Face the void without that toy, lay that cell phone down. Susie ran a red light 'cause her cell phone she was checking for messages she might have missed in the last 30 seconds. Lay that cell phone down, girl, lay that cell phone down. Smell a rose or pick your nose, but lay that cell phone down.
9.5 minutes before the hour.
Could it be?
I was looking at the at our telephone calls. And we had several calls from Los Angeles, and we're on the air there, you know, live on K-Talk. And it's right now on the West Coast, it's at this moment 10 minutes before noon, and which would be 10 minutes before 3 o'clock on the East Coast. And about 5 minutes ago, several calls just dropped right off, which is rare to see just calls just going blink, 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 people just hanging up. And here's the story. A 5.8 magnitude quake in the greater Los Angeles area. 2 miles southwest of Chino Hills, 5 miles from Diamond Bar, 5 miles from Yorba Linda, 7 miles from Pomona, and 29 miles east-southeast of Los Angeles Civic Center. This 5.8 earthquake, apparently a very, very strong one, and the reports are just starting to come in now. This was literally, while it was at, 11:42 local time, 15 seconds past, 42 minutes past the hour. So 9 minutes ago. So if you're in Los Angeles, you probably already know about this, and be careful. Be careful. We wish you all well. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Paul in Olympia, Washington. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind today?
Well, I guess it's the power of the Almighty that gets me on the air now, huh?
What's an earthquake?
What's Hi there, up? Tom. I just wanted to comment on the Republican Party here in the state of Washington.
Sure.
I was noticing that the governor for the candidate for the Republican Party was running on the we need a change. And then at the bottom of their signs, his signs, it said GOP Party.
Right. It gets even weirder. This is Dino Rossi, right?
And I was wondering, because now I got other literature from Republican candidates, and it's the same thing. GOP Party.
Right. He has actually changed. In Washington State, you can tell the Secretary of State how you want your name listed on the ballot. In other words, how you want that party identified. And Dina Rossi has chosen not to have the word Republican after his name on the ballot. It will say Dina Rossi, GOP, Christine Gregoire, Democratic. And Christine Gregoire, of course, the sitting and excellent governor, the Democrat who Rossi ran against last time, he's running against again. And you're right, he is running from his own party. Just like we heard here in Oregon that our senator, we have two senators, one's a Republican, one's a Democrat. And the Republican, of course, votes 95% of the time, more or less, with George W. Bush, right up until the very last year before the election. And he did this the last election, too, Gordon Smith. And not only is Gordon Smith all of a sudden now voting with Democrats, particularly when it doesn't count, when it doesn't matter, like on this bill yesterday to try to stop Tom Coburn from bottling up legislation. But he now has announced that he's actually not going to go to the GOP convention, to the Republican convention. So, and he's got Barack Obama. We have a Republican senator here who has Barack Obama in his ads. I work with Barack Obama on this legislation. Yeah. Yeah. Karen in Alameda, California. Hey, Karen.
Hi, Tom. I spoke to a woman who works for the campaign, the Obama campaign. She's worked in the Gore and the Kerry campaign.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's in finance. And she mentioned that if we really want the campaign to respond to us, you know, one phone call is not going to make it. We need to all go to the website. We need to all send an email about the same issue. It is time for Barack to fight back. Steve Schmidt is obviously back, and he's in fine fettle.
Yeah, absolutely. This is we're looking at Rove campaign tactics 101
yes.
all over
yes.
again.
Yes, I mean I understand, I respect him wanting to be, you know, take the high road, but enough is enough. And this
yeah.
last ad was it for me. We
yeah.
need
for,
to all go now about the same issue.
Yes, Karen, I absolutely agree, and I encourage people to contact Barack Obama's office and say, "Fight back on this McCain smear. Fight back now." Coralie in Los Angeles, listening on K-Talk. You were in the earthquake.
Oh, yes. Hi, Tom.
How
I'm
you doing?
So happy to talk to you.
Wow.
The earthquake hit a few minutes ago, and I ran to the doorway. It was a little scary.
Yeah.
My house was rocking.
Yeah. I've been in a couple of earthquakes in Los Angeles. I was staying in a friend's house in Hollywood. This is about 20 years ago. And I was on a rollout bed, and I woke up. It was like 6 o'clock in the morning or so. I woke up as the bed was rolling across the floor, you know, from the earthquake. I mean, it can be very frightening, but, you know, get in a doorway, get in a door jamb, the more secure parts of the house.
Yeah,
anyhow,
that's what I did. Yes, yeah. I was calling actually about the impeachment. You know, there were mm-hmm. impeachment hearings on, well, not impeachment, non-impeachment hearings
right, they
Friday,
had,
right?
Right. And you know, on the one hand, I'm really pleased that, you know, a lot of good people had a chance to have their say. On the other hand, I feel like we've all been patted on the head and told, you know, nice little boy and girl, go on home now, that kind of thing. You know, it's kind of patronizing.
I see this differently, Tom. I see it, you know, as a little crack, little door, a little opening, where if people who think that this executive should be impeached have a chance to speak up, you know, because even Chairman Kanye said, I believe the evidence on these matters is both credible and substantial and warrant
right.
the response of the executive branch on oath if possible.
Yeah, we need to continue pushing this, Coralie, and the way to push it is, and thank you for the call, and you know, do well with the ground moving there. The way to push it is not just to use the word impeachment, but to start using the word crimes. I mean, we have to plan for the next administration as well and for continued prosecution of these criminals. Coming up tomorrow, Wednesday on the program, Terry Jeffrey, editor of CNSNews.com. We're going to talk about conservatives relying on fear tactics to win elections. And David Sterling of the Pacific Legal Foundation, elevating nature above human rights. Don't forget, my friends, democracy depends upon you. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.